Pictured Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I started giving on that level so that God would owe me.
Whatever you do right now, don't you stop tithing.
Harvest responds only to seed, not to prayer.
This is not about material wealth. This is about God in His providence orchestrating all of history in order to bring about that which we need more than anything else, and that is to be rescued from God.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is it possible that you've been left behind on eschatology?
left behind eschatology. And you hate my dad jokes.
Yes, I do. This is Wretched Radio. That was only a joke, though, if you're a premillennialist. Otherwise, that joke wasn't funny because that's kind of how it works. I hold in my never-before-nicotine-stained fingers a helpful article from one Virgil Walker of G3 Ministries, which, by the way, I got it right here. If you're thinking about going to the G3 conference, it is in Atlanta, that's Georgia, September 11th through the 13th. Come visit the penal colony known as Georgia, downtown Atlanta. It is, in fact, I think they're doing a pre-conference day. Check that out at their website. It's g3min.org/faith. And you will receive a discount if you use the keyword or the code word Fortis, F-O-R-T-I-S. You get 30% off for the G3 conference. Virgil Walker will be there writing an article on sanctification. And it's helpful. I love helpful articles. Esoteric, I can dig it, but boy, do I appreciate it when a theologian takes the meat and says, now let's chew on that so that it actually applies to your life. There was a header in the article, and I'm going to ask you if you can translate this. If you can, that's wunderbar. If you can't, it might be a sign that you're missing the point on eschatology. Here's what Virgil Walker wrote. This is the headline. It was a subheadline, which, by the way, he actually got to the point right away. Hello, if you're a writer, get to the point right away. The first paragraph, it should have something about the title of the article. Virgil Walker makes the entire thing about sanctification. Here's the subheader. The eschatological purpose of sanctification. Can you translate that? It's kind of an odd statement, isn't it? The eschatological purpose of sanctification. So sanctification plays a role in eschatology. Here's the way that he presented it. Because Jesus is sanctifying his church so that she, that's you and me, will be presented to him as holy and blameless. The eschatological purpose of sanctification is that our sanctification readies us for the end time. It readies us for eternity. The Puritans would call it being fit for heaven. Every trial, this is Virgil, every trial, discipline, and spiritual battle serves to refine us, preparing us for our eternal inheritance in Christ. The struggles of sanctification are not meaningless. They are forging us into the image of Christ, making us, here's the word, fit for heaven. There is an eschatological purpose of sanctification. But as Virgil even alluded to this, I would suggest to you that eschatology plays a role in your sanctification. Virgil's claim is sanctification plays a role in eschatology. I heard a sermon Sunday morning at Alpharetta Bible Church that was talking about how sanctification can be enhanced, watered, fertilized when you consider eschatology. And that, I believe, is where we tend to kind of miss the boat on eschatology. We have a tendency, I think, to fall into one of two ditches when it comes to end times theology. The first ditch would be, I don't really get it. There's just a lot of details and there's just a lot of squabbling. I don't think I'm going to be the one to resolve it. So I'm just staying out. I think that's a ditch. And I would encourage you, if you're in that ditch, start climbing out. But don't climb into the other ditch, which is, I've created a system of eschatology that I absolutely, positively, beyond the shadow of a doubt, know. And I am going to try to persuade you to adhere to my eschatological system. I think that can be a ditch too. I do believe that we should have a system. I think we should be able to come up with a timeline to say, I think based on the Bible, I think this is the way it's going to go down. Don't fall into either one of those ditches because you're likely to miss the point of eschatology. And we will get to that point. And there is so much that you can get out of end times theology. And I don't think it's an argument that you should be getting out of it. I don't think it is a mere system. Please note, I just said have a system. I got a system. I think I got it sorted. I'm a pre-mill guy. I'm a dispensational premillennialist. There, I said it. I think you should figure out what you are too, because most likely you will fit into one of four categories. Here are those categories. If you've never heard a very brief summary on the four major positions of end times theology, here you go. Premillennialism. Please note, there's an historic premillennialism, and there's a more contemporary version, which is more dispensational. John Darby, late 19th century. He's the one. If you're an evangelical, you probably adhere to this system. But note, it does go back in time. There are early church fathers that had a historic pre-mill position, but they didn't have all of the details of the modern understanding of premillennialism, which states that we're living in the church age and Jesus is going to return before pre the 1,000-year reign, hence premillennialism. And at some point, he's going to rapture the church. He's going to come to get his bride, that believers are going to be caught up in the air. So Jesus is, he's coming in the clouds, but he's not touching down to earth. That's later when he, by the way, lands on the Mount of Olives. That's the way he went up. That's what the angel said to the disciples. Why are you standing here looking? Same way he went up, he's coming down. And I think it's Zechariah 4:14 that talks about Jesus returning to the Mount of Olives, which is, by the way, where he gave a lengthy discourse on end times theology. There will be signs, and then there's going to be a rapture where away goes the church to meet him in the air. On this earth, there will be a 7-year tribulation, which the premillennialists would believe is kind of broken up into two periods, 3.5 and 3.5. But during this time, it's going to be really bad. The Antichrist will be ruling, oodles of distress. But then Jesus Christ returns with his saints, binds the Antichrist, and establishes his reign for 1,000 years. That would be the millennial kingdom. Then comes the final judgment, the new heavens and the new earth. Now, it's important that you heard all of those details because you're not going to hear most of those details in the other three major positions. The pre-mill position, it has distinctives. Rapture, things get worse, not better. Church and Israel are distinct entities. The 7-year tribulation period, of the rapture of the church, Antichrist, and Jesus Christ then returning with his church. Those are pre-mill distinctives. When you get into the other big historic positions on eschatology, they're actually simpler. So if you're a fan of Occam's razor, you could maybe use that against premillennialism, but amillennialism negates millennial. So no 1,000-year reign. It's symbolic in Revelation chapter 20. The millennium that we're in it right now, it represents Jesus' current reign in heaven and in believers' hearts. Augustine can be thanked for this position. Roman Catholics adhere to it. Eastern Orthodox, a lot of Reformed Protestants, Presbyterians, Lutherans. It's historically been one of the major positions. The millennium began at Christ's first coming. Satan is bound in a limited sense. The church experiences both triumph and suffering until Jesus returns. the second coming, the final judgment. It happens simultaneously. So those are the key distinctives of amillennialism. But then you got yourself post-millennialism, that Jesus returns after the millennium. Friel, we get it already. These are reform folks. Theonomists tend to love post-millennialism. Not necessarily 1,000 years, but it represents a golden age of Christianity. The world is going to get better as the gospel spreads. Satan's influence diminishes, leading to a time of peace. And then Christ returns at the end of the era for final judgment. That's post-millennialism. Preterism, at least partial preterism, says most of that stuff was fulfilled in 70 AD when the temple and Jerusalem came tumbling down. Now, full preterism is considered heretical because it denies the return of Jesus. Partial preterism, which R.C. Sproul was, by the way, says that most of those things, but not all of those things, were fulfilled in 70 AD, which means the four pre-mentioned systems are all within orthodoxy, which means we're brothers and sisters, even though we disagree. But now that we've determined that there are eschatological systems, the question is, what is the point of eschatology? Next on Wretched Radio.
You ever notice how Christians sometimes dance around the J word? You know, judging. Yeah, we've gotten so scared of our culture that we're practically doing spiritual gymnastics trying to avoid it. What if I told you that righteous judgment isn't just some outdated concept? It's actually one of God's greatest gifts to protect His flock. That's why I'm fired up about our new resource, Thou Shalt Judge, with Todd Friel and Justin Peters. It's at FortisInstitute.org. That's the Fortis store at FortisInstitute.org. Thou Shalt Judge with Todd Friel and Justin Peters.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Marriage and parenting, they're not for the faint of heart, and in a fallen world, those sacred callings can feel overwhelming. Maybe you're just trying to keep your head above water. But here's the truth, your home wasn't designed just to survive.
But what would it look like for someone to catch sight of your marriage and think, I think it's really, really alive, and it's thriving.
Listen to Thrive with Pastor Brad Bigney, available now on Fortis Plus or your favorite podcast platforms. Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Picture this, every morning, countless Christians are waking up and wondering how they're going to navigate today's increasingly complex and upside-down world, and that's where Fortis Institute comes in. Not just another ministry, but your daily partner in standing firm in biblical truth. Will you join us? Visit FortisInstitute.org right now to become an ongoing monthly gospel partner, and together we can help Christians stand strong in their faith no matter what challenges tomorrow brings. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel. You notice how the world feels a lot different lately? At Fortis Institute, we see it too, and we're responding with even more resources to help you stand strong. Every single day, you get fresh video content that addresses today's critical issues. You get podcasts on marriage, parenting, and theology. Just visit FortisInstitute.org or download Fortis Plus right now, always free and always faithful to God's Word. Fortis Institute at FortisInstitute.org. 25 years. That's a quarter century of standing firm for biblical truth.
This is Wretched Radio.
Through every cultural shift, every challenge, every opportunity to proclaim God's truth, you've been with us. And for that, we're grateful. But none of this would be possible without faithful partners like you. Join us at FortisInstitute.org as we continue this journey together for 25 more years of faithful service.
Until tomorrow, go serve your King.
Know your church fathers.
Clement of Alexandria was an apologist in the late 2nd century. He ran a school in Alexandria, Egypt, where he instructed new converts and trained Christian apologists. He taught that only Christianity, with its revelation from God in the Bible, has the answers regarding creation, good and evil, and salvation. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
What is the purpose of eschatology? Glad you asked. There it is right there. This is Wretched Radio. That is Crystal Lewis teaching us the main point of eschatology. Get ready. It's coming. I was at that concert, Jimmy.
Oh, you were?
It was a big voice tour. And they could all sing. All of it. It was Brian Duncan. He's a whaler. Oh, I can't remember the name of the group. They were amazing.
That's, was it One Voice?
I think it was a One Voice tour, but that was not the name of the group. I think okay. Two of them were cousins or something, and Crystal Lewis, who could belt like a nobody's business, that Jesus is coming. Be ready. That's the point of eschatology, and I can actually use the Bible to make that point, because I think that's the point that Jesus was making in his Olivet Discourse. Be ready. There's so many details. It can get so complicated, and we can argue a lot over which position is right. And I ain't got nothing wrong with those conversations as long as we're not contentious when we do so. Well, I think we need to approach eschatology with some humility, but we also need to recognize the point. And I think Jesus makes that point in two chapters, Matthew 24 and 25, about his return. Here's 24:42. Therefore, after he gives a bunch of signs, be on the alert. Be on the alert. Get ready, people. Here's verse 44. For this reason, you must be ready as well. Here's 24:45 through 51. It's a parable of the faithful and unfaithful servant. In other words, be vigilant, be faithful, be ready. And then you've got Matthew 25. It's a long parable of the 10 virgins stressing the importance of being ready for the bridegroom's arrival. Matthew 25:13, be on the alert then, because you do not know the day nor the hour. This is the point of eschatology. Get ready, because Jesus is coming. And I think that we often miss that point when we get too either enamored or just consumed by some of the details which we should strive to figure out. But that's not the point. What is Jesus wanting to do with the disciples? Well, consider what they just asked. Hey, when is the temple, which was magnificent, by the way, it was one of the most amazing structures, pieces of architecture in ancient history. And it was symbolic of everything that was Israel and Jewish. And Jesus said, yeah, it's coming down. Duh! So the disciples ask when. He doesn't answer the question. And they also ask, well, you know, what about your return? When are you coming back? And he launches into two chapters explaining the details, which there have been differences of opinion, but it's the context that helps us understand what he's up to. I think it's the same context of John 14 through 16. It's the night Jesus is betrayed. He has been telling them repeatedly, I am going to be executed. I'm giving my life as a ransom for many. And this on the night he was betrayed, he's in a room with the disciples. And what does he do? He tries to comfort them. Don't let your heart be troubled. There's a lot of stuff is going to happen and it's going to be really scary. Don't let your heart be troubled. And I think that's what he's doing with the disciples. He's comforting them. And I think that's what eschatology is supposed to do. Comfort us. Now, if you're post-mill, you probably don't agree that things are going to get worse, but I think they're going to get way worse, at least according to the Olivet Discourse, that things are going to get increasingly horrible. And we're encouraged to endure, to stand firm, to bear the load, the burden of catastrophic events. Stand firm. Be ready. Be comforted because he's coming back. And he wins. And he's brought you onto his team. And you are on the right side of history. Won't that be? Won't that be a good thought? All the accusers, you're just on the wrong side of history, you Neanderthalic Christian fundamentalist. Oh, we'll see. Because when Jesus returns, he's separating goats, sheep. It's going to be a judgment. The mountains will be petitioned to fall on unbelievers because they're terrified to face the wrath of the Lamb. And these words should bring comfort to us. It should also offer hope to us. So I would ask you a question. If you're a student of eschatology, has it ever borne the fruit of comfort and hope? Has it ever borne the fruit of excitement? It's coming back. Eager anticipation? Something to look forward to? If you're a student of eschatology, has it prompted you to get on it and share the gospel because Jesus is coming? And it's going to be in the twinkling of an eye, and people are going to perish because the books, they are going to be closed. And it is going to be a final judgment. Has eschatology done that for you? If not, I think that's what Jesus was doing in Matthew 24 and 25. But alas, or a lad, if you still believe in two genders, I have two, there's more, but I have two historic confessions of faith. And they say the exact same thing, that eschatology should do something for you. This is from the Heidelberg Catechism, 1563. And by the way, when you listen to this, remember, these are believers from almost 500 years ago. They believe the same things that you do. That's the church. That's to whom we are connected. What comfort is it to you that Christ will come to judge the living and the dead? That's the question. It's a catechism question. What comfort is it to you that Jesus is coming back? It's assumed that you should be comforted by the return of Jesus. Here's the answer. That in all my sorrows and persecutions, with uplifted head, I look for the very same person who before has offered himself for my sake to the tribunal of God and has removed all curse from me, to come as judge from heaven, who shall cast all his and my enemies into everlasting condemnation, but shall translate me with all his chosen ones to himself into heavenly joy and glory. That should give you comfort, does it? And by the way, if you think that these old dead guys were just stodgy, I don't know if you caught this insertion that when Jesus comes as judge from heaven, he shall cast all of his and my enemies. That's pastoral, because there's a lot of people who have enemies. In that, they have people that have done them wrong. They have done awful things to them. And the Puritans, they wanted you to understand, vengeance is his. He's going to get them. Don't you worry about it. Don't you lay up at night. Don't you be twisting and turning all the time, worried about how can you get him back, or when is something bad going to fall? When's karma going to kick in? Going to take care of them in the last judgment. He's going to take care of his enemies and yours. This is from the Canons of Dort, 1618, 1619. But it is a most certain and comforting doctrine, certain and comforting doctrine, that the faithful and elect are, through Christ, partakers of eternal life and are thus made heirs of the eternal inheritance. And when Christ returns, they will be glorified and presented blameless before God. The early creeds, catechisms, and confessions make it emphatically clear eschatology is intended to comfort, encourage, embolden, motivate us, and to fit us for heaven. This is how it works. Jimmy, you'll be quite pleased with me.
Okay.
Brian Chappell will be. He insists you got to have illustrations inside of your sermon. So I actually had one. Let's just imagine there is somebody that you esteem highly who's coming to visit your house. Who is it? Politician, theologian, a celebrity is coming to your house. Does that change anything? Knowing that he or she is going to arrive next Wednesday, does that move you to do anything? Does it cause you perhaps to clean the house? Does it perhaps motivate you to get that project done out of the way and cleaned up so it looks better? Perhaps, do you think about your wardrobe? Ooh, I needed to get my hair cut. I got to get myself cleaned up for this person. B-I-N-G-O. That's what eschatology should do for you. It should cause you to get ready. And that is why sanctification is eschatological. When we know that Jesus is coming, and this could, nobody knows the date or the hour, but it could be right now. Right now it could happen. And that should motivate us to get sin out of our lives, to mortify that evil deed that we just can't seem to put to death, because I don't want to be caught doing that when Jesus returns, because my master's coming home. And it's a bigger deal than any celebrity, any politician, and even any theologian, that Jesus Christ is coming. And it should motivate me, not terrorize me, motivate me, clean up my house, get fit for heaven, to be eagerly anticipating his return, to be joyful even as things get darker, because I know Jesus is coming, and he's coming to the world below to take his own. Are you experiencing the fruit of eschatology? And until tomorrow, go serve your King.